This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Good to be with you. Matt McNeil here. Patrick as well. Jeff Stein will join us a little bit later on. Get him back. It's been a while since we chatted with him. Get an update on national politics with him. Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
Good, good. Busy day around here.
Yeah, really? So not like normal. All right. Sorry. Actually, this place gets very busy. We're in the process, and this is, I'm not going to talk too much about this, but we're in the process right now of actually trying to record out the holiday shows, because if you don't know, for the holidays, A, I don't have enough best of shows to do a week's worth of best of shows. B, that's just an obvious statement. And B, I just don't believe in, you know, we've got great fill-in hosts when we need them. I don't want to work these guys on the holidays. They deserve to have their holiday time off. So a few years back, like 5 years ago, we recorded shows, and we recorded out the shows. And it's a big hit. I mean, people love it. We get, you know, brand new content all through the holidays, and we do this. This year, we've got 2 hours every day to fill, so we're already working on getting these shows recorded. So I know that that's been adding to your workload here. So it does get pretty busy around this place. Are you winded at all? Are you doing okay?
No, I'm actually doing pretty well. Obviously, you and I had recorded a show this morning. We won't talk about it, but just know we're working hard.
Secret. I'll let you know. Don't worry. Coming up here, we'll let you know who's all going to be on those holiday shows. But there are some fantastic interviews we've already got set up here. We'll get into that a little bit later on. I'm a broken man, Patrick. I'm a broken man. The state's finally done it to me.
What'd they do?
Today, I bought a snowblower. This is a look of shame on my face. A man who, for years, do I need a snowblower? No. I got two hands, two legs, and a shovel. Off I go. Didn't matter. 10 inches, 20 inches. Hey, I'm your man. Get out there. Shovel away. Always. Finally, this year, I just sort of said, because here's the problem I have. You know this. I had my hip replaced 6 weeks ago, a little less than 6 weeks ago. And things are going well, although I seriously do not remember the week I was drugged out. I seriously. Wow. That was a week? I mean, seriously, it's like Halloween happened? When did that happen? Oh, okay. I don't really remember any of that. It doesn't seem like it's been 6 weeks. I am recovering nicely. Actually, I had my checkup yesterday. But in case you ever have this happen, one of the things as you recover is after years of me walking a certain way to compensate for the pain. And I'll tell you what, I was actually having some pretty bad pain with my hip before the hip replacement surgery, that my muscles kind of started walking differently. Well, now I got to reteach myself how to walk normally. And so, you know, even though I'm doing fine, you know, it's still kind of a little ginger when I stand up and have to get going. And then, of course, you know, can only go for so long. The reality is it's probably going to be 3 months total. That's, you know, to get really back into it and you're doing things back to normal. And so here it is. I got another 6 weeks before I get to 3 months. Well, guess what? That's going to be, you know, mid-January. And so, and the chances are we're going to have a pretty decent snowstorm in that time. So I said, you know what? It's time for us to stop slacking. Or start slacking, I guess. And start slacking off with my new snowblower. I got one of these. But I'm not comfortable with this choice, man. I mean, I grew up in an age where you didn't take the easy path just because you could take the easy path, you know? You shoveled snow. Did your parents always have a snowblower, or were you out there with the shovel?
My dad was get out there and do it the hard way. My mom, we've got the snowblower.
Oh, my dad was the same way. I was like, wait, what are you talking about? That, you know how much gas costs for that thing? Get out there. You guys got arms. Oh, Dad, it's cold. I don't care. You know, it's, but, you know, I think it's kind of, to a point, a good youth lesson, shoveling snow, going on out there. You know, getting out into, it's cold. It's not pleasant. it's snowing like crazy. And especially, how about the times you've got to go out there and shovel once at like 8 in the evening, then get up in the morning again and shovel again because it's been snowing all night? Yeah. Character builders. Character builders. That's what that is. And yes, sometimes the character is Charles Manson, but you still build character. I don't know if Charles Manson would have been the man he was if he just shoveled some snow. I'm just saying. Now, it builds character. It's one of those things, and it's kind of iconic. And now I've, pardon me while I just walk up and down my driveway like 20 times. Deet, deet, deet. So I did not, by the way, I do not actually have to walk up and down my driveway 20 times. I did not buy that little mini snowblower that your neighbor has. You seen the one I'm talking about that's basically, you know, it's like it runs on a 9-volt battery?
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about.
It's, the sound it makes, trying to move any snow at all. That's like an inch of snow, and it's just so laboring to get through there. I did not get that one. I got a decent one. I didn't get the heavy-duty one with tracks, like it's ready to go take on the Arctic. I mean, I could have cleaved a path to the North Pole with that sucker. Didn't get that one. Reason why is because it was quite expensive. You don't realize how expensive these things are until you go try to buy one. But I didn't go get the heavy-duty.
Did you get the one with the heated handles and auto steering that I've seen memes for lately?
I do not have it. I did not get that. I was going back and forth on the chute mover. So you know how they get the chute on there, and there is one that had a handhold thing that you just kind of slide up and down the rail, which looked really obscene, FYI. I mean, seriously obscene. But you move it up and down, and you can kind of switch it around to whatever side of the driveway you're on. Yeah, I was looking at that. No, that was another $200 to it. So no, I can bend over at the waist and move the chute to which direction I want it to go in. I'm not that pathetic. It will be nice to have that thing for the end of the driveway, though, when the snowplow comes through. That will be nice. But I feel like I failed as a Minnesotan. I got to turn in my Minnesota badge. I still have to do the front porch. And I have to do the deck. So maybe I can redeem myself by shoveling those things. or else I'll get so tired of shoveling snow in the next like 3 months. Go and say, I'm going to contract someone out here to put a heated, you know, one of those heat coils underneath all that and just melt it all away. I don't ever have to worry about it again.
Well, you can't really snow blow the stairs, so you still got to do some there. So you can feel good about that, right?
There's only one stair. There's only one real stair that's really a problem, but yeah. Yikes. 40-year-old man was found dead in an air duct in his Otter Tail County house, with family making the discovery after they'd not been able to reach him for several days. Otter Tail County Sheriff's Office said the discovery was made at the home in rural Dent on Monday morning, with family members calling 911 at 9:48 a.m. Family members who had not been able to reach the victim by phone had gone to his property, where he's found to be stuck in an air duct work on his house. So he's working on his house, went into the air duct, got stuck in there, and he died. Yikes. The man's death was confirmed by paramedics and other first responders. The death appears to be accidental, but is under investigation at this time by the Otter Tail County Sheriff's Office. That's a rough. Wow, oh, my goodness. That is a harsh way to go. I was out at the Children's Museum in St. Paul. And have you ever been out there, Patrick?
I have, yes.
Okay, so you know the big anthill they got in there?
Yeah.
Where the kids can go crawl through there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when my kids were younger, I'd go through there with it, right?
Yeah.
There was one time, the last time I ever went into that thing, I actually kind of got stuck. And I got to a point where I'm like, okay, how did I get into this? I had to stop, and it took me about 5 minutes to figure out how exactly I had gotten myself wedged into that position, and slowly worked my way out of that hole to kind of work backwards. And it took me about 20 minutes to get back out completely. And I remember getting out of there, and I just saying to myself, yeah, that's the news story I want to see. Myself having to get, you know, lifted with a crane out of the anthill at the Children's Museum. You know, like, here he is, the man we had to use the jaws of life to cut out of a children's, you know, crawl toy area. and you know, do that. I will tell you what, I started to panic when I was stuck in there. I started to panic a little bit. And, when you all of a sudden realize, no, I'm really stuck here. And what am I going to do to get out? Yeah, there it's sometimes it's, stuff like that all of a sudden makes you realize, yeah, you know what? I'm going to hire someone to do my air duct work, and I'm going to have someone else around the house while they do it in case there's ever a problem, that sort of thing. Rough way. That is a rough way. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to go on. I want to first talk about a story out of the Star Trib in regards to the people who went out and they stormed the malls, the Best Buys, on the days after Thanksgiving to steal a bunch of stuff. And it sounds like police actually have some leads. Police say they have identified suspects in the three mass grab-and-run thefts at Black Friday and Best Buy stores in Maplewood, Burnsville, and Blaine, and described the crime spree as a coordinated effort. I got news for you. If they've identified you, yeah, Best Buy is going to get you on this one. Maplewood Police Lieutenant Joe Steiner joined the Minneapolis Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Superintendent Drew Evans, said officials believe the three incidents were linked. Approximately $7,000 in merchandise was stolen from the Maplewood location, including large flat-screen televisions, tablets, and hoverboards. Evans said similar amounts were stolen from other two stores. Through through our investigation, we've learned that the group responsible for the coordinated thefts in Maplewood are also responsible for thefts just prior to our incident at the Best Buy in Blaine, Steiner said. The same group we've learned is also responsible for the mass theft at Burnsville at their Best Buy just after ours. No arrests have been made, but Steiner said police have identified multiple suspects who live in the Twin Cities. He declined to share that precise number. Police are coordinating efforts and preparing felony theft cases for prosecutors to review next week, Steiner said. $21,000. I mean, if it really was $7,000 per each location, you did all this for $21,000 worth of merchandise, and you guys are going to go to jail for a long time. Yikes. Yikes. Steiner said the Best Buy has provided high-definition video surveillance. Yeah, if you're going to rip off a tech store, realize they probably have a pretty good camera on you most of the time while you're in there. They have provided high-def video surveillance and still images of the suspects, which will be released to the public in coming days. Police have also received multiple tips. Evans said merchandise stolen from these types of incidents basically ends up being sold online, but he and Steiner declined to say if any of the items stolen on Black Friday have surfaced. Oh, I guarantee you, if you're trying to sell this online, I guarantee you police are scouring that stuff. They know exactly what was stolen, and so you can try to put a picture up there, but they'll know right away. According to Maplewood Police, the Blaine store was hit first on Black Friday. So far, Blaine and Burnsville Police have not released new details. About a dozen shoplifters looted the Maplewood Best Buy store shortly after 8 p.m. Friday, according to Maplewood Police. The suspects walked in, grabbed high-end valuable merchandise, including large televisions, and walked out. No one was injured. Shortly after, a group of 20 or 30 people swarmed a Burnsville Best Buy store and stole items. This type of criminal behavior is unacceptable, Steiner said. We will hold offenders accountable. We will make arrests, and we will submit cases for charging consideration. Evans said the BCA is coordinating closely with local law enforcement. While larceny is declining in the state, he said these types of organized thefts are on the rise. When these types of large-scale thefts occur, the costs are passed along to consumers. We can't tolerate this type of behavior. Twin Cities thefts follow several other mass robberies recently reported in the United States, including some on Black Friday. Yeah, it was something in San Francisco. They had a heck of a problem out there. My son used to work for a large box store out on the west side by the Ridgedale area. And I can't remember if it was at his store. I don't think it was at his store, but they were on alert because another one of the same stores in the metro had that happen. And it's very coordinated. You know, they were saying that they come in generally at the very end of business. So it's like if the store is open till 9, they'll come storm the doors at 8:55, run in, grab the stuff, and run out. And they kind of do this. And one of the things that's kind of interesting is they train my son at least to basically, you know, don't try. You know, it's a Dwayne The Rock Johnson workout sweatshirt. You do not have to put your life on the line for the thing, okay? Just to let him go, let the cameras catch him, you know, and, you know, make sure you look at them. If you can find any identifying features, make sure you report done with it. But that's kind of the way that they deal with it, is they tell them, don't try to be a hero. Imagine in the case of the Best Buy people, it's a freaking tablet. We don't want anyone shot for a freaking tablet, you know, and understandably. But they, you know, the way that they got cameras nowadays, I guarantee you this. And let me make sure we also understand something. You like to think that the second you guys got out to your cars and you took off, that no one knows where you guys went. There are cameras everywhere. They have tracked your car movements. I guarantee if the last store was Burnsville, they have looked. They have found every camera they can and have identified your vehicle. They've identified where it was, where it drove to, and they probably know within 2 or 3 blocks of where you're living. Or at least where you ended, where you walked away from that vehicle. So, yeah, they're going to get you. It is interesting that this, all of a sudden, this type of theft is taking off. And there was an interesting editorial that was on Yahoo News, and I'm going to read that when I come back, because I think it makes an interesting point. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but it does make an interesting point. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Stein at the bottom of the hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, this kind of flash mob robbery, it's not just unique to Minnesota. It's been happening all over the place, Leslie, in California, Illinois, Maryland, as well as Minnesota. Retailers ranging from Nordstrom's to 7-Eleven. Wait a minute. You did a flash mob robbery of a 7-Eleven. Well, I'm going to guess lotto tickets. I mean, I'm trying to think of what you mean. A bag of Fritos is not exactly going to get you, you know, and I mean, that's going to be a, you can enjoy them, I guess.
Guy just empties the slushy machine into a bucket and runs out.
Does the Homer Simpson just puts his head underneath, opens his mouth and hits on? There you go. I think there's more of a hygiene issue if you really want to do it at that point. My guess would, I mean, a 7-Eleven, I'm guessing with cigarettes and maybe lottery tickets would be what they're stealing there, because I can't see what else would be of value. Anyway, but it's something that's happening quite a bit. And there's this editorial, and this is the individual that's put this out is Leonard Pitts Jr. I believe he's out of Miami, out of the Miami Tribune. And he put this out. For some, the search for answers to uncork pet theories about poverty, permissiveness, or punishment. But none of those things is unique to this era. Think about it. The model for robbery has always been available to enterprising thieves. It's simple math. What one or two security guards do if 60 people decide to walk in and loot the place. Guaranteed advances, granted advances in communications technology make that easier to organize now than it would have been. But still, a crime wave like this theoretically could have happened in 1985 or 2002. It makes sense to wonder why it didn't. What about this particular era has inspired this particular trend? And it's an interesting thing. I think this was going on, but on a much less of a scale back then. Because I can remember, I think, even in the 90s, stories of hearing of flash mob robberies. But it wasn't as coordinated or common as it is today. Here is his theory. The social covenant has shattered, meaning the thousands unspoken understandings by which society functions, the agreements to which we all sign on without a word being spoken. Some are encoded in law, others are encoded in us. Either way, the rules, the norms, might be a better word, people usually obey even when they could get away without doing so. You don't stand facing the back wall of an elevator. In heavy traffic, you take turns merging. You stop at the red light even when the street is deserted. And, oh yes, you don't join a mob to ransack a store. While there is almost certainly – now, once again, here's some of the problems I have with this. I'm going to kind of point out problems I have with this article as I read it, although I'm not completely dismissing it. All that other stuff, facing the back of an elevator or merging or – and by the way, we still need to learn how to merge in Minnesota – or running a red light even when there's no one around. Those are minor crimes. It's a pretty big jump then to compare all that to ransacking a store. While there's almost certainly some hardcore criminality leads this crime wave, once many of its foot soldiers are people with little in the way of serious police records. How much do you want to bet most of them will turn out to be ordinary workday folk who got the word there was free stuff to be had and all you had to do was take it, like some giddy holiday from social norms? Where would they have gotten the idea such a holiday was even possible? Surely the opportunistic looting that marred last year's peacefully protest of racial injustice helped influence them. But I'm going to say this. That was, if you are sitting there and you're saying that people upset about racial injustice in this country are negated because someone shoplifted a tube of toothpaste from a Target, come on. That's you trying the arguments of racial injustice in this country and using the feeblest and weakest of attempts to do so. Surely the opportunistic looting and marred last year's peaceful protests of racial injustice helped influence them, but that's only hardly the only or arguably even the most corrosive transgression of social norms that we've seen in recent years. To the contrary, we've seen police and other authority figures exempt themselves from mask and vaccine mandates and dare mayors and governors to do anything about it. We've seen ex-public officials thumb their noses at congressional subpoenas. We've seen a seditionist mob breach the U.S. Capitol and be lionized for it by certain members of Congress and the media. And we've seen a president who delighted in shattering norms, refusing to provide his tax returns, flouting the emolument clause of the Constitution, openly politicking on government property, and the list goes on and on. Worst of all, we've seen little in the way of accountability for any of it. So the question isn't how ordinary people who would have gotten the idea of a holiday from social norms is possible. How could they have not? Everywhere you look, someone else is seceding from the covenants that make it possible for civil society to function. What makes these smash-and-grab robberies seem less a mystery and more just another troubling reflection of our time? Why would people do this? Heck, why would they not? That's Leonard Pitts from Miami. You know, here's where I do think that the guy actually does make a good point, is he's right. There's a lot of people talking about how they no longer are going to follow the law. They're no longer going to follow the rules. And people are applauding them. And frankly, partly because I think our society and our system isn't designed to basically hold these people that violate most norms accountable, there's very little accountability for this. And so if I'm looking around and I'm seeing all these people that are basically breaking the law or at least thumbing their nose at the law, especially when you look at law enforcement doing it, in the case of, I ain't going to do what Joe Biden says, because you're some stupid idiot sheriff that thinks you somehow override everything in this country. Come on, you moron, stop it. Why would people, if you're not going to follow the law, if the person who's supposed to be enforcing the law is openly saying, I'm not going to follow the law, then why should other people follow the law? And it's an interesting argument. And I'm not necessarily agreeing with this wholeheartedly, but it's not totally off base. Like I said, if I'm out in society and I see people are breaking the law and there's no accountability for it, when can I get my piece of the pie? And you know, I'm not saying it makes it right. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying break the law. But I think that it's like when Republicans sit there and say, where has the decency gone in America? And you just scroll through their timelines on their social media from the last 10 years and they go, oh, that's right. It was me. There is a tendency to believe that, okay, why are people not respecting the law anymore? Well, why don't we start with Donald Trump? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff. J-E-F-F-Jeff.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author, perfect for the holiday gift giving. Go find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his weekly show down there, weekly daily show down there. And of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Jeff, hello, sir.
It's a weekly show. It's a daily show. You cannot avoid the Iowa Business Report.
It knows where you live.
You think Santa knows what's going on? Oh, no. Hashtag IBR knows what you're doing. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. You had a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I mean, I basically had the obligatory midday ramen noodles and the frozen pizza for the evening. And, it was very nice. Very nice.
Oh, I love holidays for working in Iowa radio. I have many stories.
Yes. And they all are still true every single day.
I never even knew Norelco made a coffee pot. I'm sorry.
Your former boss's name came up today, by the way. Don't mind us, audience.
It's okay. They're here for us. And we were out doing a live broadcast. Where were we at today?
Actually, at the Sullivan Brothers, and folks may remember the story of the five Sullivan brothers who died in a common calamity during World War II. They're from Waterloo, Iowa, and the Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum facility, which is a fantastic facility, is just up the road. And so we hosted an event, and we had 14 different authors of various young works, science fiction, history, I mean, just a whole variety of things. And we had a little author fair up there at the museum so people could come in and meet authors and get their books signed. And one of the authors is a good friend of one of your former bosses in Iowa, and we just left it at that. We acknowledged that we both knew her, and we were done.
My name came up, lots of swearing ensued, and off you went. Well, that's very cool. And by the way, you mentioned the Sullivan Brothers. There was the basis for Saving Private Ryan. Was that the basis for that movie?
Yeah, I mean, one of, yeah, absolutely right, yeah.
Jeff, I wanted to, we had, speaking of name dropping, President Biden was in town yesterday. I was nowhere near him while he spoke over in the southeast side of town, but he was.
Is this true? There were two men in sunglasses and dark suits that monitored the door to the room in which you were tied to a chair just to make sure?
No comment. Okay. you mean the advance team from the White House? Yes, they were here. Chet and John, they're just great guys. We went out for some loose meat sandwiches afterwards. So, yeah, I enjoyed seeing them. He's in town. I want to bring up something, and you have talked about this, the way politics works. Mm-hmm. It's two things. Once you have already lost the fight, don't keep trying to win the fight because you've already lost. The second thing you've always brought up is that politics is generally won on kitchen table issues, bread and butter issues. And you know, the infrastructure bill, as Republicans have voiced their opinion, they didn't vote for it. They passed it. It's going to bring a lot of money out into Minnesota and across the country. It's going to rebuild a lot of infrastructure in this country. Probably still not nearly enough, but a good start. Broadband, water treatment facilities. This is a good thing. I was listening to the Republicans do their, obligatory rip on Biden for showing up, and they kept going after this. And I'm just sort of like, do you guys realize how kind of dumb it is for you guys at this point to be complaining about the infrastructure bill, which you're going to try to be taking credit for when they build that road in your district?
This is the worst bill ever. It would be horrible if it passed. Let me attend the ribbon cutting.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
That's what it is. Now, there's a situation, and I try to point this out whenever someone is complaining about the bill. Donald Trump, you remember him. I'm old enough to remember when Donald Trump wanted an infrastructure bill of a Republican-controlled House and Senate and wanted $2 trillion for it. And all the Republicans thought it was a great idea, but they couldn't get quite all their ducks in a row to pass it because some of them didn't want Trump to have a victory, showing you the state of the Republican Party. All right, so all of a sudden, it's a cheaper infrastructure bill. And why are people dead set against it? All right, I understand the fact that we had COVID kind of jump in here and throw the budget out of whack, and we've spent trillions of dollars on that. But does that mean we don't have the money for this anymore? Because of the fact, I mean, it's all borrowed money. And if you can make the justification for waterways, internet, highways, all of the traditional infrastructure, the amount of money being spent on that is less than what Trump had suggested. Yet the average Republican who feels like they are in tune with things says there were 13 members of the Senate, 19 members of the House who are traitors for voting what, and watch this name drop, I'm going to top you on this, what Senator Joseph Lieberman on my program called a public works bill.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
You.
But you know, it's an interesting thing because, again, this is, I mean, he makes a good point that I'm not smart enough to think of. This stuff used to be called public works.
Yes.
And everybody was in favor of it because they wanted the naming opportunity. And so you don't, if it's a good bill because it was Trump and a bad bill because it was Biden, I don't know that I see that. What I see is bad bridges, bad roads, supply chain issues because the Mississippi River cannot be navigable as it should. Then if this in any way helps for the future, isn't that how we rebuild? I don't care who gets the credit. I don't care what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true that there was some pork in it because Nancy Pelosi was in charge? Yes, but there would have been the other side's pork if a Republican had been in charge.
They had the chance.
Yes, and they had the chance.
Yes.
Exactly. With, by the way, higher levels of majority, larger majorities in each chamber than the Democrats have. So, the fact that they separated the two bills, hard infrastructure from soft infrastructure, that certain Republicans who actually had a little forward thinking, the cover that they needed. Vote for roads and bridges. Don't vote for green energy or whatever the split happens to be. But again, politics is covering everything, and it is. And who's getting harmed, Matt? It's the American people.
You bring up the fact that there were multiple Republicans that voted for this bill, which should just tell you enough about what was in that bill. And here's the real trick that who is a Republican from Nebraska that voted for the bill? Is it Cobart or whatever? I can't remember his name.
I don't know.
Nebraska 4. But he
I didn't dismissive.
Some guy over there. But he voted for the bill. When you look at this bill, it is a bit, Biden's very good at this. It is a bit of a precision attack, that broadband specifically. That's rural America. And if all of a sudden you can take broadband, and the guy in Nebraska saw that, and he was not a fool, he jumped on board. You can go on out there and you put broadband out in areas that can't even get a good internet signal right now to save themselves, you are going to be beloved, and I don't care what your letter is next to your name. And Biden knew that, and even though it was just the hard infrastructure, as you mentioned, that was a precision hit that will come back. I mean, if I'm the Republicans, I'm just ignore this at this point. You lost. I would even say avoid any of the ribbon cuttings, because the first thing people are going to be saying is, didn't you vote against this? And I just say, just walk away. You were foolish enough not to jump on board. You deserve you can't really fight this fight anymore. And if the only option they really have is actually to ignore this actually happened.
It just goes back, and I don't like making everything about, what I know, but I know that I have a senator in my state who's up for re-election next year, a Republican who voted for the bill, and he's getting all sorts of back talk from Republicans. And he said, look, for 5 years, everywhere I went, people said infrastructure, infrastructure, you got to pass infrastructure. So I passed infrastructure. What's the problem? Okay. It's one of these things where I don't care what the party affiliation is, to your point. You got to call out inconsistency and hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. Hypocrisy, because if you claimed you were for infrastructure, but now you're not, what's the intervening circumstance? Now, there are some who say it's COVID and the amount of government spending. Okay, you can try to make that point. I'm not sure it's saleable, but you can try to at least make that point. But when your best argument is, well, Trump's idea was Trump's and Biden's is Biden's, and that's why I'm voting this way, I don't care which way you're voting, that's bad for the country.
I think it was a guy from one of the representatives from Virginia. I think it was Virginia. He was a Democrat, and he was talking about why I voted for this bill. And a Republican went out there and said, oh, this is a bad bill. And he just picked out a map and apparently had every substandard bridge in Virginia. And he says, you tell me which bridges we're not going to replace. And that Republican ran from that one as fast as he could. You know, and
well, that's right. You know, I mean, it's a matter of, again, we all want the conveniences that an active government can provide. We may not want to pay for them.
Yeah.
And we may not like the fact that somebody else is getting something and we're not. But, you know, again, you made such an excellent point on rural broadband. We didn't know how bad in some areas the internet was until everybody started working from home. And even in some suburbs.
Yes.
The internet was not robust enough for mom and dad to work from home while the kids were doing school from home. And so when you start talking about areas in a rural state of 25, 45, 50,000 people who said, man, our internet's really bad. Okay, that tells us that is just as much infrastructure as the actual asphalt road. And you have to address it or you're going to fall behind. And we already are behind.
Well, and broadband specifically, yeah, you're right. Helps with school, helps with work. But then all of a sudden they're streaming Hawkeye on Disney Plus, and that doesn't hurt either. The fact that all of a sudden the feeling of you know, the modern conveniences actually being available to you, no matter where you are, border to border in any state. You know, it's like I said, that was a pretty slick move by the White House to make sure that was included, because that's going to, I think, help in the long run. Democrats start to, you know, at least maybe start to work their way back into some of these rural areas.
Well, there's no question. But again, everything is local.
Yes.
And I have to admit, as we discussed, I was a little bit out of pocket today. Was it known earlier today, or is this brand new, that Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker is not running for reelection?
I did not hear that one myself. That's a new one for me.
Okay. All right. That's CNN right now. And so that is a Republican governor in a very blue state, Massachusetts. So for all of these Republicans, now I don't know, maybe he's claiming, you know, I've done it enough, I was always for term limits, my family needs me, I have no idea. I have a big cushy job lined up outside of, I don't know. But let's just go with what it would look like on the surface. For everybody who said, oh, look at 2021, it's a red wave, just wait for 2022 and 2024, et cetera, you got a Republican governor in Massachusetts saying, I'm good, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I mean, they point to all of the Democrats, and there have been many who are retiring from Congress. I don't know that it's more than in any other year. Certainly when you talk about redistricting, it changes the dynamic. So here's the Republicans' great hope in New England saying, somebody else deal with this. What does that tell you?
Well, and you bring up, how about this whole thing between Mace and Green, where it's getting ugly? And, you know, and Mace really is kind of representing the kind of more traditional swearing Republicans, while Green is kind of representing the more far right swearing Republicans. You brought up the fact that they couldn't pass the infrastructure bill because there was infighting within their own party. What we're now starting to see is you brought in these people that want to watch the world burn. And that's what you get with Boebert and Madison Crawford and Green and Getz and all these people. You bring in these people who don't want to have a successful government so that they can burn the whole thing down. And then they're acting surprised that their little tyrants are getting along with everyone else in their own party.
Okay, so here's the minority leader. Here's McCarthy.
Yes.
He brings the two of them together and says, ladies, let us play nice in the sandbox. Remember Ronald Reagan said, thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican, commandment number 11. And the moment that he got done with that meeting, and I think I have the chronology right, they had that meeting, then Green goes on a nationally syndicated show and compares Nancy Mace, Nancy Pelosi, they're really the same person. Which leads Mace to then call into the show to be on the next hour for her shot at Green, who's talking about how she's a threat to the democracy. Get popcorn. Well, I mean, you know,
the best was May says, well, I'm going to talk with, and she did not say this, I'm going to like run to my, she goes, we obviously need to sit down with the McCarthy and work this out. And Green, who took that as a, I'm going to your boss, says, I've called my dad, AKA Donald Trump, and I was talking with him. And it's kind of like, wow, this really is, you guys are not very good at this, are you? But here they are.
This escalated in a hurry, as they say. Right.
Well, and then on top of it, you've got Boebert and this whole thing with Ilhan Omar, where, you know, she gets caught saying that on camera, and then of course doesn't really apologize. You know, it gives Ilhan Omar the ability to say, "Well, yeah, I hung up on her," which, you know, that was pretty solid. But then, but then you find out that this has been her running shtick at these fundraisers. You know, the speech, you and I know about this. Politicians, they have that speech in the back pocket they need to pull out every time they do it. And it's part of that speech. And she has done this, I guarantee it's not just two times. She's probably said this thing a bunch of times. And now all of a sudden, you've got a real big problem, because this is Islamophobia, xenophobia, bigotry, just right out there and unapologetic as it is.
Argue policy. Don't argue personality. And that is the problem with this. I was having a conversation, I wish I could remember with who. But your name did not come up by name, but here's why. All right. I dug a hole. This is promo material. Get ready. Make sure this is rolling. Okay. We were talking about various programs. And the person that I was speaking to, I was a couple, and they were right of center. But what they said was they enjoyed shows where the hosts could banter back and forth and not agree on everything. And they mentioned the old Hannity and Colm show on Fox. And it's like, well, you didn't have to agree with either one, but they had, and this was the point, and this is how you came up, respectful discussions, even if they didn't agree on everything. And they said, well, you just don't find that anymore. And I said, well, you really don't. I'm blessed to be part of an example where you and I may not get along, but we have an intelligent discussion, and we get along. And if we don't agree, we'll talk about something again next week. But when the idea is nothing more than talking points, if I came here with nothing other than the talking points that I just pulled off of the email that I got from the central authority, it's bad radio. It's not good for the public. People just listening to what they want to listen to. How about a good, respectful conversation on issues? But the stuff about all the personality stuff, it just shows they're not serious as individuals.
They want to watch the world burn. That's what these people, they are not there. They're there for themselves and the adulation that they get from their fans, because these are, and I'll say it bluntly, they're 20-time losers that have finally been validated because they managed to get elected, because they happened to become the Republican by being the most far crazy person in a far crazy right district. And they're in love with themselves. And so this is going to be, the Republican Party has got a really big problem heading into next year, because
And I know you need to take a break, but here's the only thing I would question or challenge what you said.
Yes.
I don't think they're thinking it through. In other words, you said they want to watch it burn. I don't think they're thinking about that. They're only thinking about the other half of what you said, which is, I got my viral video clip. This is going to be good to help raise money. I'm going to get reelected from a new district. That's as far as they're thinking. They're not thinking about the ramifications and whether it burns down, because they're so focused on themselves.
They're putting the lit match in their own pocket. All right, now let's take a break. Come on back. Mark Meadows, some interesting revelations from him. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. Jeff, Mark Meadows, who I did not think was the type of guy that was going to try to hog the spotlight, indeed is. Not only has he agreed to testify before the 1-6 Commission, but then he releases a pretty big bombshell that right before, was it the second debate with Biden? He had tested positive for COVID, but they did not say anything to anyone. Now, it did, to be fair, they did retest him with a more accurate test, and he came back negative, but still. Yeah, that's, you know, once again, not a sign of a great leader during a pandemic.
The concept of a false positive followed by a negative, that alone would not bother you, just simply because, again, of the accuracy of the second test. The second test was more accurate. Okay. But now you hear in this forthcoming memoir from Meadows that Trump didn't look good. He didn't sound good. His color wasn't good. And then when you find out that he was supposed to have been tested at the debate site, like right before you meet the other guy, and they didn't test him. They did not test him because he showed up late. And Chris Wallace of Fox News, who was the moderator, pointed out Trump was not tested because he arrived late. Everyone relied on the honor system. 3 days later, Trump is positive and with a case that required significant hospitalization and treatment. So if you just took it of, okay, he was positive, then he was negative, and okay, that happens. That doesn't worry me. It's all the rest of it, right down to we don't want to take a chance of a test because we don't want to know what the result's going to be.
He met with Gold Star families, wealthy donors at a Minnesota fundraiser. White House staff, crews of the Air Force One. I mean, this was, and what it was he just did not want to make it seem like he was weak in any way. So he jeopardized the health and well-being of a lot of people. This is pre-vaccine, we should mention as well.
Oh, absolutely. It was October.
Yeah.
And again, as you recall, he was taken by helicopter to Walter Reed and was unsteady. I don't know that the symptoms come on that quickly.
No.
And so did he have it all along? Did they say, well, we got one negative test. It is better to ask for forgiveness than permission, and we'll just test after the debate.
You
hope that's not the case.
And you remember, they were so on the attack after people said, well, you had this no mask required White House ceremony where then they started circling the people in the crowd that got sick. And the people like, and he was pretty close to the president. You know, once again, it is a case where it was just bad management. But then you find out that, obviously jeopardizing Joe Biden, who thankfully wore a mask that entire time. I mean, a very serious allegation.
Oh, without question. I mean, it's the kind of thing that it could have impacted the outcome of the whole election, quite honestly.
If you do not have Jeff Stein's books, once again, fantastic stocking stuffers. If you need them for the holidays, go to nextchapterbooks.totallyiowa.com. We'll spotlight this interview. Jeff, we'll get the Iowa Politics Report up a little bit later on. Thank you very much, my friend.
Have a good week, sir.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here today. By the way, we'll spotlight Stein. That will be up. Is it already up already, Patrick?
It is up and ready to go everywhere you want it.
There you go. Enjoy Stein at your leisure. I will say this. I think the reason why Stein and I, first of all, I don't think he's an extreme far right guy. I mean, I think he does lean more to the right from center, but he's still pretty much a centerist. I really do think that about Jeff. I've talked to him for years about things, and yeah, occasionally he gets out there, but then there are occasionally times where he's very agreeable on stuff on the left. So, he's kind of in the center, but here's the deal. Jeff and I will agree if we're wrong. If I'm wrong about something, I'll tell him, yeah, you're right, I'm wrong. And he'll do the same thing. That's how you have a decent conversation. It's the reason why most people can't deal with, any kind of discussion from two different points of view is because it's got to be my way or the highway. It's the Marjorie Taylor Greene sort of thing. By the way, can I mention one thing about Trump? And we mentioned this at the end of the show about how Trump was diagnosed sick. Do you remember we had said last year that, and I'm specifically going to bring up Stan Hubbard, who is an elderly man who is a Republican. He gives to Republican causes. And they said that this event was going to go happen. And I said, for God's sakes, I hope Stan Hubbard doesn't go, because I don't want the guy getting sick. And he didn't. And now we realize, because Trump had done that fundraiser, that exact fundraiser, sick, that, my God, thank God he didn't go. And if I was anyone else in that party, I'd be mad as heck at Trump for coming out there at this point. Wow. I remember us talking about that, saying, there's some elderly conservative donors that probably shouldn't be going to this event. And now we know, yeah, Trump was there sick, likely. 952-946-6205. On a much less important level, Patrick, the Minnesota women's soccer team, do you remember we had a name contest for this team?
Yes.
They put out about 40 different names. Well, they have narrowed the list down, and there is one clear, obvious choice, and then the other two. I'll let you figure out. Maybe I'm wrong. Now, I'm going to say this, too. Before, if you go to bringmethenews.com, this is a new story they have over there. There's a visual component that goes with this that doesn't really work with radio. So I would highly encourage that, and maybe that's helping my argument here. But I'll just say it like this. So number one, Aurora FC. All right. Number two, Foxfire. And number three, Arctic MN. Now, I'm presuming it's MN, not Minnesota. But that's the actual name. It's Arctic MN. I think it's, if you look at the design and the logo for the Aurora, it's not even close. It's by far the best of the bunch on this. Have you seen the logos yet yourself there, Patrick?
I'm pulling them up right now. Right. That is a great logo for the Aurora, though.
The Aurora FC has got a good one here. The three final nicknames choices of the new pre-professional soccer team in Minnesota. On Tuesday night, Minnesota's women's soccer unveiled the three finalists and the complimentary logos. Regardless of the new nickname choice, women's soccer will debut May 2022 in the inaugural season of the USL Women's League, which will serve as a pre-professional league that works a pipeline between college and professional soccer. The finalist logos were created by local female designers, co-founder Ali Rinke, Nicole Meyer, and Carl Zaneta Iglesias. On August 31st, Minnesota became the first independent women's team in the U.S. to offer community ownership. More than $992,000 of the team's $1 million goal has been reached. The opportunity to invest to become part of the ownership group is open through December 6th. Owners will choose the winning name and logo in January. I hope it's Aurora, because that one, it does seem to be a little bit better than the other ones, for sure. At least, I love this story. I just love this story, because there's a quote coming up here that's, yeah, this is why I live here. At least one black bear in Minnesota is going to have a great sleep this winter. The Voyageurs Wolf Project, which studies wolves in and around Voyageurs National Park in far northern Minnesota, captured a very large bear on its trail cameras recently. Quote, "This might be the fattest bear we have ever seen in our area." How much do you think that porker weighs? Unfortunately, we only got one video of this beauty. It isn't enough to appreciate the bear's curves and figures. It worked hard for that body, said Voyager's Wolf Project wrote on social media. Black bears in Minnesota typically eat green vegetation in the spring, ants in June, and are a variety of berries in the summer and nuts in the fall. They're also known to break into garbage cans and chow on birds-eating crops. Adult black bears are typically between 150 and 500 pounds and are 5 to 6 feet long, according to the DNR. However, these well-fared bears can be heavier. The North American Bear Center says the heaviest black bear on record weighed 1,000 pounds when shot in New Brunswick. Well, it couldn't really run away. Well, never mind. While the heaviest known female was 520 pounds, was found in northeastern Minnesota in 1993. I'm presuming not shot. There have also been several reports of hunters harvesting black bears weighing more than 700 pounds, including a hunter in northwestern Minnesota in 2017. Researchers with the Voyageurs Wolf Project discovered the video of the bear while going through their trail camera footage the summer and fall, and been sharing some gems like this on social media, including a bobcat and her two kittens, a first for them, a lynx, which are uncommon in the area, and, of course, wolves and their pups. So I will say this. The Bear Center up in Ely, I have been there. It's very different from the International Wolf Center. The International Wolf Center, you go there, and it's far more about the wolves kind of, you know, trying to keep the wolves as wild and independent and letting you just get a look into the wolves' lives. The International Bear Center is about trying to get money out of you. There's a lot of there. And the bears in that place, they seem to be eating a lot of the food. That's how they got them in there. It's like, hey, let's get the bears down out of the woods. And they start like pouring a pile of kibble down for them. And here come the bears, you know, kind of right down there. Hey, these are majestic animals from the wild. Let's see one of them eat a marshmallow out of my mouth. You know, it's like, whoa, that's marshmallows. Really? Okay. That is a big fat bear, though. I'm going to guess trash induced, because it is a black bear. They don't. I don't think they eat fish. At least they don't eat a lot of them. They're. Yeah, I'm going to guess that's. Is it the camera that was posted right behind Sven and Ollie's in Grand Marais? Is it that bear who's eating all the leftover pizza in the dumpster? Because I'll tell you what, I'd be a big boy too if I was there. Very cool, by the way. Bobcat and her two kittens. I'd love to see that. And a lynx. My dad lived in northern Minnesota most of his life. And it wasn't until he was on the road to Gilbert from Virginia and saw a lynx run across the road. And it's the first time he'd ever seen a lynx out in the wild. So that was, I thought that was pretty good. Finally today, in the more frivolous news side of things, the high school basketball player wound up and sucker-punched his opponent twice during the post-game handshakes this week. Now the police are investigating. That I got to imagine you connected, because I don't think anyone would be expecting anyone to wallop you while you're in the post-game, good game handshake line. Here's what we know. Nevada High School, which I can say is Nevada, not Nevada, because I lived in Ames, Iowa, right next to Nevada for many years. Nevada High School was facing off against Carlisle High School in Iowa on Tuesday when both teams lined up to say good game after Nevada's 72-47 win. Number 4 on Carlisle decided to attack number 5 on Nevada. Unclear what happened in the game, but appears the players were going through the line without incident before the Carlisle guard threw punches at the opponent's stomach and head. The player who was attacked then falls to the ground as other players and coaches step in to put a stop to the altercation. With the Carlisle player getting wrestled to the ground, we spoke with the Nevada superintendent, Dr. Steve Gray, tells us the player is currently okay. Carlisle PD say they're unaware of the incident and an investigation is underway. The Carlisle superintendent says this is without question an unfortunate incident that does not represent our school culture. It exists in Carlisle Community School District. I want to make it clear this type of conduct is not tolerated at Carlisle. The district will follow the student code of conduct policy and procedures for the investigation of this incident and implement appropriate consequences. Like, I don't know, not throwing haymakers in the good game line. Have you? I mean, that's like Hanson Brothers stuff, man. That's like beating each other up during the warm-ups.
Yeah, I just watched the video of this, and it legitimately was just like that. They're just, you know, just happened to walk together, and bam, and there it is.
Have you ever seen anyone else do that in the good game handshake?
I have not, fortunately. I kind of think about it, especially when I see teams kind of have a little bit of a rough game, you know, because I do a lot of hockey. So, you know, teams kind of get a little frustrated with each other as the game goes along. So sometimes I kind of wonder if there's going to be. But usually if something like that happens in the post game, they don't wait to get in the handshake line. They're going at it as soon as that buzzer goes off.
Or else maybe if it's one of those things where you can't stay in that line, it's just too hard for you. You get out of the line and you just go to the locker room right away and do that. I'm a little surprised at this. I'm not doubting this has ever happened before, but it is bizarre to see it happen so roughly, to say the least. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I will post this links to the story a little bit later on so you can go find that yourself and view for your own pleasure there. Wednesday's COVID-19 update. Let's give the Minnesota coronavirus update for the day. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 3,580 newly reported cases, 100 newly reported deaths. Now, that's higher than normal due to the reporting delays from the Thanksgiving holiday. It brings the state's COVID death total to 9,482. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a 7-day rolling average is 10.4, which is down from 10.6 on November 22nd. Anything over 10 puts Minnesota in jeopardy, that's for sure, of having some problems there. We still are in that high-risk zone. It should be noted the Delta variant is the dominant strain in Minnesota. The newly discovered Omicron variant has only been detected once. I'll get to that story here in just a second. As of November 29th, the state reported that 3,651,598 people have 596 people rather have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,365,496 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 1,114,287 third dose booster shots. Through November 29th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,562. That is up from 1,532 by another 30. Reported on November 29th, of those hospitalized, 356 people are in intensive care. That's up from 343. And 1,206 are in non-ICU care, up from 1,189. The most ICU patients during the duration of the pandemic was 399. We are now, 43 patients in ICU away from the worst ever. And once again, let me not mix words. The reason this is so bad right now is because of the unvaccinated. I made this point this morning. Where are the Republicans right now? It's clear from the data we're seeing, the vast majority of people that are getting sick are out in rural Minnesota, out in Republican districts. And that does mean that the vast majority of people who are in ICU are unvaccinated people from rural Minnesota. And I have yet to see one Republican come on out there and saying, okay, game, you know, let's enough with the games, get vaccinated and stay healthy. And yet I haven't seen one Republican, not a single Republican, make any comment whatsoever about this crisis, not as of right now. And I mean, this is what we need is true leadership. And I understand the modern Republican voter will watch, will listen to the Republicans, follow the Republicans' advice, probably not get vaccinated, not wear a mask, watch as multiple members of their family get sick, maybe one or two die, and they're not ever going to put one plus one. They'll never put that equation together. They'll never say, well, the reason why this happened was because we followed the advice of that idiot Republican. No. They won't ever do that. They'll just sit there and clench their fist and shake it at the cloud and say, Biden or Tim Walz. Right now, I was reading an article. There's an estimation that the property values in rural America, not just Minnesota, but America, are going to plummet because, quite literally, people are going to be looking to sell their homes because of the health care bills that they have incurred, and are going to be looking to basically sell their homes. And so there's going to be a glut of homes on the market because of people going bankrupt and having to sell their homes in rural America. Think about that. That it's so bad that it's actually going to drive down property values across the board. Unbelievable. There are currently only 26 staffed ICU beds available in the entire state. 26. 13 pediatric ICU beds available, which is up from the 16 available on November 29th. Pediatric non-ICU beds are also strained, with only 24 available statewide. There are only 24 non-ICU pediatric beds available. Think about that. Car accidents, health crises. Jeez. 915,942. 915,942, that's how many people have gotten COVID in the state of Minnesota. And at this point, it's overwhelming rural Republican districts where people are getting sick. God help y'all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. More on the coronavirus update when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, Patrick, you and I are about to be corrected here. At the University of Minnesota hockey game versus North Dakota, apparently a fight broke out in the post-game handshake. Apparently they – well, those two teams do not like each other. But, yeah, that's – you might want to talk – the coach might want to talk to them after that. I don't know if it was the first or second game. But I've got to imagine someone got a chatting with after that. What do you do – I mean, in a hockey game, what do they do if you're doing that? Because clearly it's not during the game. Can they get penalized? Can they get thrown out of the next game?
Yes, they can. It depends on how severe it is.
Do they put them in the penalty box by themselves on the ice? They just got to wait for 3 minutes in there, and then they can come on out?
You guys get to sit in there until the lights get shut off in the arena.
It's kind of cold. Can I go home now?
Yes, they can be issued penalties either that carry over to the next game or...
Yeah. I've actually, when you said that, I remember there was a game, I think it was a Gopher game, where one of our guys was in the penalty box to begin the game.
That might have happened in the pregame. Sometimes that'll happen too, where stuff will happen before the game, and so the guys will have to wait it out at the start of the game.
You guys need to calm down, okay? You need to calm down, all right? Just everyone. Carlisle basketball players, hockey players, calm down. You're angry at something, you know, don't just start lashing out at things. Look in the mirror and see how you fix your life. Governor Tim Walz announced today the arrival of a federal medical team to increase the availability of COVID-19 monoclonal antibody treatments for Minnesotans and expand capacity at the state's popular Mall of America community vaccination location. Governor Walz requested, can I just say this about, I was talking to a friend about this. They said, do you think that the Mall of America site has actually just, because it's there, and that you do get so many tourists that come on in, not just Minnesotans, across the country that come into the Mall of America. And I said, do you really think that that site's done good? And I said, yes. I guarantee you there are probably people who are there. You know what? I'll tell you what. While I'm here, I'm going to get a vaccine. Why not? And, I mean, it's probably not a lot of people, but I got to give the credit. The Mall of America, that was a good idea. I could make an argument that maybe at every – and I don't know. Do they do it at every Wild game? Do they do it at every Vikings game, Gopher game? Do they offer inoculations to your knowledge?
I could not say.
I would hope that they would. What a great opportunity. People are there. You know, hey, before I go pay $20 for a freaking beer, why not? I'll go get inoculated for free. There you go. I would hope that they would. That was a good idea. Mall of America is a good location. And Mall of America, like I said, I'll give you, and I'll criticize you when you need to be criticized, which is not too often, but you guys do a lot of good over there. I'm very, very happy with you guys over there. So nicely done. Nicely done. Governor Walz requested the Federal Emergency Management Agency medical team to bolster the administration's strategy of providing even more COVID-19 tools to Minnesotans by vaccinating everyone who is eligible and providing life-saving treatments to those who are sick. This is a quote, I believe, from Governor Walz. We have powerful tools at our disposal to fight COVID-19. Getting vaccinated is the best way to protect yourself and others from the virus, and treatments like monoclonal antibodies can help sick Minnesotans get better. To make sure more Minnesotans can access these life-saving vaccines and treatments, we requested and have received significant support from FEMA. I'm grateful for our ongoing partnership with the Biden administration, and I urge Minnesotans to take advantage of these opportunities to stay safe from COVID-19. Get your shot if you haven't yet. Get a booster right away if you're eligible. Get tested if you're feeling ill so you can get in the treatment you need. I'm continually impressed by Minnesotans' strong interest in getting their children vaccinated and receiving their booster shots. Yeah, it sounds like kids, since they opened it up, that's been fairly popular. I know even a lot of conservative parents who are praising the idea that their kids got vaccinated. And yeah, good for you. Welcome to the party, pal. It's about time. Let's see. I'm deeply grateful for the effective COVID-19 treatments like monoclonal antibodies, said Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This FEMA team will help more Minnesotans get their shot and receive treatment if they need it. I thank the Biden administration and federal doctors and nurses for making the resources available to our state. Yes, government works. Government works. And it works very well sometimes. Like here. Thank you. Thank you, President Biden. Thank you very much, FEMA. We appreciate this. You know, it's fighting a crisis that's been created by idiots. And at the end of the day, we can talk about, you know, the pandemic on that level. But the reality is you know, as far as being, you know, the virus and all this stuff. But the reality is we cannot talk about in the future. We can never talk about just COVID as COVID. It's COVID and then the stupidity that drove COVID to hold on for as long as it did. You know, there are some countries on the planet right now that don't have cases or have very few cases at all. We used to be like that. We used to. Our country used to be like that when they came up with the polio vaccine. People lined up for blocks. People didn't question. People, you know, there wasn't people out there going, it makes you magnetize. There weren't people out there saying, kids like iron lungs better than vaccines. And that's where we're at today. Because opportunists will use the fear created by the pandemic to try to give themselves power. And unfortunately, there are too many idiots out there that are more than willing to give those idiots power. We used to lead. We used to. Instead, now we've got people who, it's a conspiracy. Just idiots. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt. Every single freaking day, I say the same thing. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. I say that every single day. And yet, every single day, I have to fight with people who are, you're lying. I want to die. Or at the very least, are willing to go the low dignity route and jam some horse dewormer up their backside. Duh. Just scary. It's just scary. We used to lead, and now we're having to fight stupidity far more than we have to fight the virus. In total, 16 FEMA personnel are arriving in Minnesota this week to support vaccination and monoclonal antibody treatment efforts. With the FEMA team's arrival, capacity at the Mall of America's vaccination site will increase from 1,500 doses per day to 1,500 to 2,000 doses. The site is a popular location for Minnesota families seeking vaccinations for 5 to 11-year-olds, as well as fully vaccinated Minnesotans seeking boosters. Since November 3rd, the site has administered nearly 14,000 doses to 5 to 11-year-olds. Bravo! Mall of America, you guys are doing great over there. And it administered, and all the health professionals. It's not just the Mall of America, it's the health professionals, Governor Walz, the federal government, thank you. Thank you. That's a lot of people getting help there. Minnesota's age 12 and up are also receiving their primary series of vaccines at MOA. The FEMA team will also allow more COVID-19 patients in central Minnesota to receive the monoclonal antibody treatment. The administration and medical providers around the state are working to increase accessibility to the monoclonal antibody treatments. Minnesota has been administering about 2,000 doses of the treatment per week since the beginning of October and has been increasing in recent weeks. This is a medication that if you are sick, that you can take, and it actually helps you, you know, recover a lot better, which is a good thing. For the week ending November 24th, providers administered over 3,000 infusions for the first time. Last week, the Minnesota Department of Health expanded hours and capacity as at St. Paul Clinic and M Health Fairview added about 300 appointments for monoclonal antibody treatment as Columbia Heights Clinic. Together, the measures increased Twin Cities monoclonal antibody treatment's capacity by 50%. With the FEMA team's arrival, Minnesota will be able to further expand monoclonal antibody treatment capacity. So, we have some people who are caring about you. They're called Democrats. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You think I'm not pulling punches. There are some people that don't want you dead. There's some people that don't want you sick. And there's some people that don't want you bankrupt. And they're called the DFL. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, with the whole debate going on at the Supreme Court, the GOP today decided to tweet out, life is precious. Republicans will always stand for the sanctity of life, which I quote tweeted and came back and said, well, unless it's school age kids gunned down on a campus or the hungry or people who can't afford medical treatment for treatable diseases, or immigrants desperately trying to come to America for a chance at a better life, or Capitol Hill police, or the Kurds, or black people, or Native American people. I could go on and on and on. But sure, yeah, sanctity of life, Republicans. Sure thing. Sure thing. Outside of all those other elements, you know. Sure. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Back to the Minnesota coronavirus update. Two more points here to make. A person in California who had been vaccinated against COVID-19 became the first in the U.S. to have an identified case of Omicron variant. Patrick, you and I talked about this, I believe, yesterday. It's everywhere at this point. I just don't see with our modern air travel how in the world that you are ever going to be able to control, you know, get something like this under control that quickly, unless you immediately shut down all the flights immediately.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And it's in California. Well, at least this one variant is. The White House did announce this on Wednesday. Scientists continue to study the risk posed by the new virus strain. Dr. Anthony Fauci told reporters the person who was a traveler who returned from South Africa on November 22nd and tested positive on November 29th. Fauci said the person, if you were in South Africa at all, I think at this point you need to run to your local, testing facility and get tested. He said the person was vaccinated but not had received a booster shot was experiencing mild symptoms. The Biden administration moved late last month to restrict travel from southern Africa, where the variant was first identified and has been widespread. Clusters of cases. What was that story? In the story there, they doubled the cases overnight down in South Africa? Ugh. Clusters of cases have also been identified in about two dozen other nations. We knew that it was just a matter of time before the first case of Omicron would be detected in the United States, Fauci said. He said the person was improving and added, I think what's happening now is another example of why it's important for people to get vaccinated, but also boosting. Boosting is very important. I got to tell you the truth. I feel sorry for this person who's got the first person that's got Omicron, because you know every doctor in every medical institute wants to talk to him, test him, check him. We don't know. They say it's fairly contagious. Whether it's more contagious than Delta, we don't know. We don't know the severity of it. We don't know. And so you're going to be the first person there. There's going to be a lot of people in line saying, do you mind if we swab you? Once again, make sure you check out my OnlyFans page. All right. Swabbing happens. He said the person was improving, added it's example why it's important to get vaccinated. Officials have said they contacted everyone who had close contact with the person. They all tested negative, and I'm sure they're all happy about that. Genomic sequencing was conducted at the University of California, San Francisco, and the sequence was confirmed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. CDC is taking steps to tighten U.S. testing rules for travelers from overseas, including requiring a test for all travelers within a day of boarding a flight to the U.S. regardless of vaccination status, and also considered mandating post-arrival testing. And I think one of the things was it CNN that had someone on that they made the good point? He said, okay, so you're traveling somewhere overseas. Okay, fine. You're vaccinated. You say to yourself, I want to fly overseas. Fine. You can still, you're going to still, no matter what, be in a jeopardized position. Because even if I just had some friends that came back, I think they were in Puerto Rico, and they went out and they had a real private beach. It looks great. I mean, it was one of those, it wasn't a B&B, but it was like a rental cabin, but it was by itself. They had their own beach. They had boats, kayaks, all the fun stuff. Very few other people. They basically, it was just a nice little tight-knit family get together, but they still had to go back to the airport. They still had to get on the flight. They still had to fly back to, and probably get a connecting flight. I don't think there's any direct flights to Puerto Rico from Minneapolis, St. Paul.
When we went there, we went through Atlanta. So I would assume you probably have to go through Atlanta or Miami probably to get there.
Oh, thank God. Georgia and Florida, two states that have really not cared that much about trying to stop this. So just keep that in mind if you're going on. And once again, we have a lot to know. Be concerned? Sure. Panic? No. And we find out the details of this. Once again, I think the safest thing is get vaccinated. Get your booster. I'm going to get my booster. I'm going to try and get my booster this upcoming weekend here. Now, I couldn't get it before, and I couldn't get it while I was getting the hip replacement surgery. But you think I'm waiting any longer? Jab me. Jab me hard, baby. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you just tuned into this show right at that moment, you're, what in the heck? It's just, yeah, it's this show. It's what we do. 952, jab me harder. Yes. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I mentioned this before. It's worth mentioning again. Former President Trump knowingly put the risk of lives of Gold Star families, wealthy donors at a Minnesota fundraiser, then Democratic nominee Joe Biden, White House staff, crews of Air Force One, White House reporters, and others in danger, according to a new book from their former chief of staff. Trump finally admitted he had contracted COVID-19 just after midnight, October 2nd, barely 24 hours following a campaign rally in Minnesota, where he looked peaked and cut short his typically 90 minutes of rambling remarks to just 45. Oh, God, the way they describe him now.
Hey there. Yes, Donald Trump, not feeling great. Still better than Joe Biden, although I still see triple Joe Bidens whenever I look around the room. Not feeling too good.
By the way, how would you know he didn't look good? I mean, he's orange. He's always sweating. He's always standing at a weird angle. I mean, seriously, it's like saying, looking at a jack-o'-lantern and saying, wow, that jack-o'-lantern looks sick.
That's what I was wondering when you mentioned that in the last hour when we were talking about that. I'm like, how could you tell? I mean, the guy just looks like a walking, you know, not even like a jack-o'-lantern. Like you said, like that when the jack-o'-lantern's been 3 weeks after Halloween.
Patrick, I think this highlight marker that I'm holding in my hand is sick. I look at it. It's hard to say. I think it's ill. We need to get that. We get this tested for Omicron. Thank you. Did he look human? I mean, that's when he doesn't look. He didn't look bad.
Maybe he wanted to eat something that wasn't McDonald's. Actually, I want like fresh fruits and vegetables.
He wanted a salad. Whoa! What's wrong with him? Is he okay? Oh, gosh. He did not want to get spanked by the magazine with his face on the cover. That's, you know, he's feeling a little down. He's a little tuckered. He needs a nap. That was almost 6 days after September 26th when he originally tested positive, according to former chief of staff Mark Meadows in his new memoir, reported by The Guardian. In the intervening days, Trump held a reception for families. So he got tested positive. Then he admitted he was positive in October, but he was likely positive the entire time when he met families of fallen service members, hosted a gathering of business leaders of the White House, attended a presidential debate with Biden, first visited reporters of the press section of Air Force One, interacted with multiple flight crews and both Marine helicopters and Air Force One planes. The whole episode demonstrates a total disregard for public health and the well-being of others. Trump's former communication director who left the White House when Trump would not stop lying about the 2020 election results. So that's a Trump communications director saying this whole episode demonstrates his total disregard for public health and well-being of others. Dear Lord! She added that she didn't know about the positive test. It's hard to believe anyone thought it was okay. Meadows, who wrote on the second test conducted later in September 26, showed a negative result, and that Trump and his staff chose to believe it was correct and previous one false rather than the vice versa, even though neither test was considered completely reliable at that time. Trump, a frequent liar. God, I love this story. Trump, a frequent liar who told thousands of falsehoods during his presidency, claimed on Wednesday that Meadows' assertions in his book were fake news. Fake news. You're just such a joke. You are just a walking joke. 952-946-6205. I also mentioned this story last hour, and let me break down this a little bit. Shortly after Representative Lauren Boebert posted a video onto social media in which she again refused to apologize for Islamophobic comments made towards fellow Representative Ilhan Omar, a man rang the Minnesota representative's office and left a voicemail. Come get it, blank, you blank Muslim piece of blank, you jihadist, the man said. We know what you are. You're a blank traitor. You will not live much longer, blank. I can almost guarantee you that. Wow. Omar in her second term. And by the way, you're going to jail, whoever you are. You might think, well, I got an unlisted number. Oh, I guarantee you they know who you are right now. Omar, in her second term as a representative from Minnesota's 5th Congressional District, played the slur-laden voicemail at a news conference Tuesday afternoon, called on Republican leadership to confront anti-Muslim hatred in its ranks and hold those who perpetuate it accountable. We cannot and by the way, her point is solid. The reason why this clown is calling her up and threatening her and swearing at her is because Lauren Boebert refuses to come on out and just say, you know what, I'm sorry, I should never have said this, it was wrong, I want to apologize to the Muslim community, I will work on trying to make this right, but I was wrong. Instead, she's like, I'm still going to win this debate. No, you can't. You're a bigot. You're a bigot and you lost. But because she's not out there helping her culpability, well, we cannot pretend that this hate speech from leading politicians does not have real consequences, Omar said. At times, visibly distressed before sharing the recording from her phone, she cited the repeated threats to her life she has received over the years, oftentimes triggered by Republican attacks on her faith. Boebert is among the latest Republican officials to use bigoted language when referencing Omar earlier this week. Video of Colorado Republican telling supporters about running into Omar in an elevator emerged. And I said, well, she doesn't have a backpack, so we should be fine, Boebert tells the crowd in the video, a reference to suicide bombers. She also called Omar a member of the Jihad Squad. Tuesday afternoon, CNN dug up a second video from September in which Boebert spins a similar story. Omar said the encounter Boebert describes never even happened. They never even were on the elevator at the same time. On Monday, she and Boebert had a phone call that ended abruptly. Boebert basically started yelling at her, and she hung up on her. Prominent Democrats demanded Boebert retract her comments and called on GOP leadership to take action. Heck, they can't even keep their own party from fighting out in public. You think he's going to actually show any leadership on this? Of course not. McCarthy's a freaking waste. As of Wednesday morning, Boebert's only apology came over the weekend and was addressed to anyone in the Muslim community I offended with my comment about Representative Omar. Though, Lauren, here you go. I can let me edit this down for you. All right. Two words. I'm sorry. See? Simple. Easy. I love how they, to anyone who is offended by what I said, not saying what I, you know, not acknowledging what she said was wrong, just saying if you are offended by it, I'm sorry if you are offended by it. During her Tuesday news conference, Omar chronicled the rise in anti-Muslim sentiment seen in the U.S. over the past 20 years, saying Islamophobia pervades our culture, our politics, and even our policy discussions. And by the way, it should be mentioned that this is, you know, Trump and his long history of anti-Muslim rhetoric is the template for a lot of these people. Boebert appeared on Fox News today, or Tuesday night rather, saying, I will not be canceled, and describing the focus of his, oh, I wish, I mean, you'd be, oh God, I wish we could cancel you. She said that her people talking about her comments towards Omar was a distraction. She basically, here's the full text of the phone call here. Okay, I got to be careful here. We see you, you Muslim blank, blank, blank. We know that you're up to. You are all about taking over our country. Don't worry. There's plenty that would love an opportunity to take you off the face of this blanking earth. Come get it, blank, you blank Muslim piece of blank, you jihadist. We know what you are. You're a blank traitor. You will not live much longer, blank. I can almost guarantee you that we, the people, are rising up, and you'll be tried for a military tribunal, and you'll be found guilty. Now, mind you, this guy is saying this because of her religious faith. That's the entire point of this. This is all attack just on her religion. And I want to say something to Cuddles here, who left this voicemail. Dude, you are going to jail. And trust me when I say this. You are going to jail for a long time, because they do not treat threats like this to sitting politicians lightly. Well, unless you're the 160 people there, they're not nearly getting the sentences they should get there. Boebert did say, whoever left the message should be arrested and prosecuted. So the very least she could do, but she did not apologize to Omar for her comments, but restated she apologizes to the Muslim community. You're just a weak person, Lauren Boebert. You're just a weak, weak person. 952-946-6205. I'll give you an update on the Potter trial when we come on back to wrap up the show. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, if you're not listening, live programming 8 to 10 tonight. Of course, myself, we got Native Roots Radio coming on up here, but this is a brand new show we've got. Make sure you're with us throughout the evening right here on AM 950. Really quick, Rochelle Olson, I'm following her over at the Strip. She's been doing a breakdown of the jury selection in the Potter trial. I'm not sure exactly because we've been on the air. I'm not exactly sure what we're up to. I think we're up to 7 the last time I checked. Number 25, the jury person didn't think Wright should have been killed. 25 also had a neutral view on Wright. She said that she didn't have a good view of Potter, but said that she could kind of think she could judge fairly. They dismissed 25 for cause because of her omission. She leans towards the victim. 26 wrote the question there. The place near their work was damaged under rust. She doesn't want to serve on 26 didn't want to serve on the case, saying she has lots of friends and family who are very opinionated. She also has job interviews, is finishing up her degree, has finals coming soon, and a few of them are in person. 26 says if chosen, she will serve Potter duty because it's a civic duty. Defense lawyer Gray asks a couple of quick questions. Can it be fair and impartial? 26, despite not wanting to serve on the jury, is now part of the Potter jury. You know, once again, you can't just say I can't be there because I got other things going on. You have a duty to have to be there. 28 came on in. It has neutral opinions on Potter and Wright, wrote the questionnaire. He's affirmed under questioning defense by Paul Eng. 28 feels community was negatively impacted by the riots, unrest because of property damage. 28 is procurement officer with the MBA of University of W in Madison. Defense is done questioning 28. 28 says he's extraordinarily busy right now. Frank is pressing him whether he'd have to the night to catch up. 28 says if he's allowed to, he'd be certainly able to go a night and catch up. Frank wonders if he'd get enough sleep. Frank pressing 28 on a strong trust in police. 28 says he hasn't seen evidence that they treat them any differently, referring to the treatment of black people. Really? Wow. Frank asked 28 if law enforcement is capable of doing things wrong. 28 says, of course, they're human. Prosecutor, though, used a strike to keep 28 off the jury. Then came number 30, lives on the south side of Minneapolis. If she's biased against police, 30 says no, and she hasn't personally had any negative interactions with police. 30 also says her uncle was tased. 30 says he's been on and off hard drugs all his life, was suicidal, got tagged off a bridge for his own safety. She is pregnant and has severe vomiting and nausea every day, multiple times a day. Says she's in an emergency room because 6 times, mostly recently in October. That's tough. The judge asked how often 30 feels nauseous from her pregnancy. 30 times. 30 says pretty much every day. Asked if 30 will be able, physically able to sit as a juror for 30 days and says yes. So they allow the prosecutor and defense to question her. The judge excused the 30, though, saying, I hope you're feeling better through your pregnancy. Very nice cause of defense motion over state objection. So that was there was there. And then was there any more for today? 32. Some medical issues came up with 32. Says if second guesses everything police officer, if you second guess everything a police officer does, nothing would get done. They wouldn't be able to keep law and order. Frank presses her. Seems like she has a lot of faith in the police to keep things civil. 32 says exactly. 32 said that she doesn't think she's biased. I don't think I need all the facts to make a decision or an opinion. Defense lawyer saying Frank is improperly asking the same question over and over again. If I'm not the one who should just willy-nilly say you're guilty or you're innocent or whatever. Prosecutor Matt Frank now questioning 32 about her experience in the Army. 32 says she's 83 and she was in for less than 2 years. She owns a firearm but doesn't currently have a permit to carry. The prosecutors, she is not seated. They moved 32 off the jury for the day. So that's where they're at, and they're done for the day. So my count is 7, including the college student who doesn't necessarily want to be on the jury. Obviously more tomorrow on that, but it's interesting. It seems like they're doing a pretty good job of keeping bias out on both sides. So we'll have to see how this goes when it comes to the trial. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a wonderful rest of your day. We are back on a Thursday. Till then, see ya.